an idea that we're going to come back to a number of times these next several months. In the midst of the parable of the sower, we're given a list of four things. And for 42 plus years, I have used this list of four things to go to at least once each year to discuss the topic that's mentioned. I'll do that because there are four items that we're told that encourage those who have received the seed and begun the Christian walk to eventually quit bearing fruit. And we don't always see it that way, but that's the way it's written. Matthew 13, beginning at verse 20, we know about the rocky places, and it's when the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. Matthew 13, verse 21, but since he has no root, he lasts only a short time. And of course, we make the application that we need to develop roots. New Christians need to begin developing roots so that they can produce lasting fruit. But we don't always read the next verse. The next verse tells us when trouble or persecution becomes because of the word, he lasts only a short time, he quickly falls away. So trouble in this life and persecution because of the word. Those will be two sermon topics sometime in the next year. Trouble in this world and persecution because of the word. The next one, what was sown among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life, that's today's lesson, and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it out. And that will come sometime in the next 12 months, at least once. So trouble in this life, persecution because of the word, worry, or the deceitfulness of wealth. Those four areas tell us that two out of three Christians, if this is saying it to that extent, two out of three Christians will fall away and not bear lasting fruit. It's worth our attention with some regularity because of what the list tells us. Turn to Matthew 6. We're not going to stay there very long because this isn't a new topic. These aren't new verses, but we need to use them to spring from as we're talking about worry. And Jesus encourages us to look around us and see all the things that God does in a given day, the beautiful creation, and all the things that are out there that are magnificent in their response to their place, to their life, if you will, and the reality that they are doing just fine because God is involved in the circumstances. And so he gives us some ability to open our eyes, to see around us, and then he makes some fairly specific points. First of all, those who worry, verse 30, have little faith. You of little faith. And that comes up often in the Gospels as he's talking to people who ought to know better. They ought to act better because they know better. Intellectually, they know better. Emotions get in the way. That's how we will close the lesson. But emotions get in the way and we don't act the way we know. And then he says, you can't change much about your life. What do you think? How can you change most of the things that you have in this life? We worry about things over which we have no control. And we also worry about things that usually don't happen. And when you look at that in an intellectual way, with the emotions laid aside, it ought to stop us in our tracks. I don't have any control over this. And usually they don't happen. These things don't usually happen. And so it ought to stop us in our track. Intellectually, it stops the emotions from reacting or overreacting to that situation of life. And so he tells us that. Verse 32, he tells us that the pagans run after these things. To the Matthew listener, the Jewish audience, he's saying the Gentiles act that way. And that would certainly get their attention. Well, if the Gentiles act that way, I'm certainly not going to do that. I'm better than them, they would have thought. So, those who don't honor, love, appreciate, or trust God act that way. They act as if there is no God. You could take the next step. They act as if there's no God. And then he says, take each day as a single day. When I'm counseling people, and when they're dealing with hard things, I'll ask them, can you follow some of the things we've prayed about and talked about today for a day? Of course. They don't even hesitate. Of course I can do better today. I had a young person say, I'm not sure. He says, how about half a day? I negotiated with him. Half a day. Oh, yes, I can do better half a day. And you realize something? God doesn't give us but one day at a time. One day at a time. And if we worry about tomorrow, which we don't have no guarantee of, we lose the joy that we could have today by worrying about tomorrow. We can't control it. Things usually don't happen. And we lose the joy that we could have today being concerned about tomorrow, which we may not even have. And we certainly can't control it. I want to let you respond. This isn't new. I don't want to stay here a lot. But I want to lay some foundation that we'll be coming back to in many, many other circumstances. Your reflections on this one day at a time. Act as if there's a God in your life. And you don't have control over so many things. Tom, I saw him.
Mm-hmm. Some people, and this is not to make fun of this, there's some people that have OCD.
Yep.
And they like to have control over every aspect of their life.
Yep.
And they can make it very hard for them to kind of take a step back and kind of let God in.
Yep.
Because they like to feel like they're in control. It can be very hard for them. Very challenging.
Absolutely. And with that being true, and I think it is, how do you change that? Terry? You go to God. You go to God. Say, God, I'm this person. This is the way I'm made. By the way, you did this to me, you could even say. And by the way, I taught you how to lament in December. Go out and lament. Go out and lament about how God made you, but then give it to Him. Half a day. One day. That's all you're given. Half a day. One day. How about 1 hour? I want to make improvement. I need to make progress. I need to trust in you more and more. And we're not limited with a single wish, prayer, request from God. It may need to be several times in a day as we're trying to let experience, counseling, and maybe even medication help us in that daily circumstance. Other comments? Yes.
You mentioned one day at a time, a lot of people can't Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, that's next Sunday's sermon. Next Sunday morning, I'm going to tell you there's one other thing given to us in Scripture beyond the sin list. The list of sins that are given to us, those certainly can cause us to lose our salvation. But trouble of this life, persecution because of the word, worries and the deceitfulness of wealth, and the other is not forgiving others. And we're dealing with it next week because we need it desperately. Other comments, and thank you for those. I appreciate, and I say it often, I appreciate the reality that God knows me. He knows the number of hairs on my head, Matthew 10. They're numbered. That's another lesson. Not counted, but numbered. Each one has a number attached to it. And that's pretty dynamic when you think about it. He knows the number of hairs on my head. Here's 1, 2, 5, 22. Landon Saunders spoke on that 35 years ago, and he said, and some of those were left on the bathroom sink this morning when I combed my hair. And I've never forgotten that, and it's happening more for me. But he says something in verse 34 that we don't always take in as we could. Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. And that's just another way of saying you don't have tomorrow. Let it take care of itself when it comes. And by the way, tomorrow becomes today. You don't have tomorrow. That verse is true in a very real way, because tomorrow, it's today, tomorrow. And then he says something. And I've always appreciated God letting us know that He knows us. He says each day has enough trouble of its own. And what can we say? Don't we know? Thank you, Lord, for letting me know that You know. Think about that. Each day has enough trouble of its own. He knows that about you and me. He knows that about today. And He will know that about tomorrow as well. So I've appreciated Him saying that to us through His Son, the Son incarnate. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And it's just true. It's just true. Turn to Philippians 4. It takes us to a solution, if you will, and to acknowledge a problem and to smack us in the face a little bit. We can't just stop there, even though we need it, and some instruction will come from those verses from Matthew 6. But he tells us something in Philippians 4, and it begins with verse 4 with Paul the rejoicer. Rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. In the context of Philippians, those of us who study Philippians and those of us who've tried to develop some lessons from it, we have four joy things that still our joy. Four things that still our joy. And chapter 4 is worry. But you don't see the word there. You see the remedy of it, and you see the application of that remedy, but it's worry, anxiety, he uses in verse 6. Do not be anxious about anything. Now, how is that possible? How is it possible for us to be faithful to that admonition? He tells us. He gives us step by step, doesn't he? What's the very next thing that is mentioned? Prayer. We've already mentioned that today. Be anxious about nothing, but in everything by prayer and petition. So prayer is that generic word, if you will, that says take it to God. Talk to God about it. Tell Him what He already knows, but let Him know that you know. That's really what prayer is. Talk to God about it. And as you talk to Him, petition Him. Tell Him what you need. Tell Him what you need to get through this day, to be faithful and to bear fruit. Tell Him what you need today in prayer as you acknowledge Him, who He is, where He is, but eventually petition Him with those things. And then what's next? Thanksgiving. Why in the world is that here? What is God telling us about ourselves with this third thing on that list? Acknowledge who I am. Come to me in prayer with your petitions. Tell me what you need. But don't forget to be thankful for what I've already done. Don't forget to be thankful for the ways I've answered those prayers and petitions thus far. Many years ago, I was an associate minister, first church I ever worked for. The former minister who had moved across town to another congregation had a philosophy as he edited the bulletin. He said, if we put someone in the hospital or we acknowledge them as being sick in the bulletin, we need to get them out and present them as well in the bulletin. And I haven't been faithful to that. It wasn't my principle, but it made sense, didn't it? Let people know. And he was very specific to say, here's our prayer, here's our petition, and here's the thank you. Thank you, and it's a fairly quick, short synopsis of what had occurred based on those prayers and petitions among the members. Makes sense, doesn't it? I may have just talked myself into doing it. Prayers and petitions, but remember what I've done for you already. How many of us are good at that? I'm raising my hand to model what you are supposed to be doing now. Terry says it takes a lot of practice, but as I answer my own question, I'm going to put my hand up just a little bit right here. It's certainly not up here. We forget to be thankful as God has answered prayers and responded to our petitions. We're given the directive of how to not be anxious about anything. Don't be anxious about anything. And you present your request to God. So there's a motif there. Prayer, petition, thanksgiving, and present them. It's as if have it in the right order, have this understanding, and then go for it. Just go for it. Give it to God. So it's a pretty good example, if you will, formula, if you will. Tom? Yeah, children to father, child to father. And that's not the case with some in this world. Let's acknowledge it. We use one of the gift cards that you gave us. Thank you, Theris and Karen. And ate breakfast yesterday. And there's a fella on the sidewalk. And we gave him a bag that we'd prepared. And we've done it for years as we walked in. And we gave him a little bit of money walking out. There are a lot of people that don't have that security. Notice them and do something about it. Notice them and be prepared to do something. I encourage you. But it's a blessing when we, as spiritual children, know that our needs are met. Know that our needs are met. Is he through? What's the conclusion? The next verse. Mark?
There's a long list, but you need to think of things that are good and moral.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's an application. When we're anxious about everything, are we anxious about things that are true, that are really going to happen, or really did happen? But that's another counseling session. Before that, he gives us something in verse 7. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding. He tells us something about his peace just so we can understand it. It transcends all understanding. You're not going to get it. It's not going to be always clear. You're not going to know the end result. Even though with prayer and petition and thanksgiving, you give those things to God, you're not going to know the end result day by day. But the peace of God, which transcends all understanding. So lay the misunderstanding aside and come to grips with peace. What is God's desire for you in not wanting us to be anxious about anything? What does he want us to have? His peace. His peace at work in our life. And how easy is that? I should say, why is it so difficult? Yeah. Yeah, here and now takes that away. We can have that.
But it goes back to if God says it, believe it. Christianity isn't just about feeling. We have to believe when he says something, he means it.
Yep.
And then if he says do it, do it. If he says don't do it, stop doing it.
And that peace can reign in that environment. Terry said if he says do something, do it. If he says don't do it, don't do it. We can have that peace. God gives it to us, and we need to believe that. It seemed like I remember someone here in December talking about how I don't feel saved, and we need to believe God, and we need to see ourselves as God sees us. But that's part of it. See yourself as God sees you, and believe Him, and take that mantle of peace upon yourself. Take it. And receive it, assimilate it, whatever the words might be for ourselves. But he's not through. He knows us, remember that. He knows us, and he says, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, Philippians 4, 7b, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. The word guard is very specific. He will keep it away. He will shut the door to it. He will not let it affect you. You're guarded from it. However, you need to attach that word to this process. And he deals with the intellect and the emotions, the mind and the heart. When you believe God, you get it here, intellectually, with maturity and application and life experiences, it will find its way from your mind down into your heart. And he will guard our hearts from overreacting or not responding the way we should. He will control our emotions by making things known to us intellectually. But it has to get from here to really become us. To really show itself in us day by day, in our actions. We are real good about responding to emotions. We can have a trigger go off in our circumstances in less than a millisecond, and the adrenaline is sky high. You know what that feels like. It's happened. Flight or fight and all the ramifications that are part of that process. Our emotions can just hit a trigger just like that and boom, our adrenaline is sky high in just a millisecond. What God tells us, shows us, gives us intellectually will find its way into our heart, our emotions, and it will temper those reactions and change our actions, if you will. And that's why it's such a good answer. Mark has alluded, we'll not go there today, but we certainly can at another time. It ends in verse 9, put it into practice and the God of peace will be with you. Put what into practice? Well, a thought process. A thought process. Very often in counseling, you'll ask someone, is this something that really happened? Well, no. Is this something you're concerned will happen? Well, yeah. God says, think about that which is true. My dad was the smartest person I knew, not because he was a chemist at DuPont, but because he was a godly man. Elder for 31 years, preached, my first minister, preached at small churches. Finally, as a family of 7 children, we went to one closer to our house, and he would fill in preaching often. But he says one of the things in dealing with children you've got to do is you've got to know how to get something from them when you need information. And you don't say, now tell me the truth. They don't know what that means. I didn't know that. I thought that would be the best way to get an answer. Tell me the truth. No, he said, you've got to say to them, get down on their level. I used to be able to do this easier. I'm going to do it next to a pew so I can get back up. Get down on their level and say, tell me what really happened. And they relate to that better. Tell me what really happened. Oh, granddaddy, you won't believe it. This dog and this. And they just spout the information. Tell me the truth. It's not so clear. Whatsoever is true, what really happened in that circumstance. And whatever is noble, don't let trash get in. Trash in, trash out. Think about noble things. We won't go any further. You apply it. Maybe we can talk about this at one of our small groups. Turn to Psalm 37. It's another word attached to this lesson that applies. Let me stop. Let me let you respond. Mind and heart. The love of God, the peace of God will guard our minds and hearts. Observations, comments, application. Stan? Yeah.
There's also the phrase,
don't
sweat the small stuff.
Yep.
Of course, it's all small stuff.
Minor surgery is what happens to someone else. Someone told me years ago. Any surgery, none of it's minor if it's on my body. Another way of saying something similar, pick your fights. Don't sweat the small stuff, but pick your fights. Sometimes you just walk away. It's not worth it. So several things there. Other ideas, other idioms, if you will. Mind and heart. Mind and heart. God guards them. He guards them. He keeps things under control. But more than that, He keeps it out. If we'll yield to Him, He'll keep it out of our realm of thinking or action, if you will. Anything else? Don't be shy. Yes, Richard?
Would you say your heart is your core true self and your subconscious and almost everything except your mind?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying, it's the things that you feel, it's the things that you dream about when you're at night and you're, your subconscious takes over. Whereas the mind is the control of your body. And God, if you can change your thinking, you can change your core.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. John MacArthur, evangelical preacher somewhere in South California, wrote the definitive book on charismatic movement 30 years ago. The definitive book on charismatic chaos, the name of it. But he made an observation there in talking about the emotionalism of some religious bodies. It's true of an individual. He said emotion cannot stimulate understanding or thought or knowledge. Emotion can't do that. It's not what it's designed for. It's not how it works. Richard just said the same thing. But understanding, teaching, intellect can stir emotion. And, of course, to turn the charismatic movement upside down is teach them something. Let them know something. Don't just get them excited and stirred into a frenzy. And the fallacy of that, he also observed, is when you stir a group of people into a frenzy, next week, if you don't match it and up it just a little bit, you've lost them. You've got to raise the emotional... Got to stand up and shout a little bit louder. We've got to clap a little bit more. Whatever it is, it's chaos. Knowledge can generate emotions. Knowledge can generate better actions. I think I just shared it. George?
I can't help but thinking of Proverbs 4, verse 23, where it says, above all else, guard your heart because it's the wellspring of life. The wellspring, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
And that's your motivation.
Absolutely.
That's your makeup, spiritual motivation.
Yeah, it's who you are. It's who you are. God will guard it, your thoughts and your hearts. It will guard, you'll be guarded. In this, remember, it begins with anxiety. Don't be anxious. But in all things. Any other? I'm glad I stopped and gave you opportunity. Any other additions? Yes, Mike?
If you think about the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can affect others only when it's part of us, when there's something here to spread, to share. Go to Psalm 37. The topic is the concern that David has as he's watching wicked people prosper. So we're not talking about just generally worry of other things. The psalm is very specific, but he uses a word that applies to what we're discussing. Psalm 37, do not fret because of evil men or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. What has he just said? Betty, they're not going to live very long. It's not worth it. They're not worth it. These are evil men doing evil things. Don't fret over them. They're not going to last very long. And I'm not certain it's talking about imminent death physically, but certainly that could be a part of it. But how do you not fret over things around you? Less generic. The principle, if we can, I think it's appropriate, by, verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. You can spend all your time fretting about what everyone else is doing wrong and you're not trusting in the Lord, and you're not doing good in your life. Your affections, your attentions, your concerns are in the wrong places. It's not worth it. They're not worth it. Trust and doing good is a good response. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. There we are. There's that principle again. How many of you, if you've not heard these words, think about them. How many of you have within you the ability to delight yourself in the Lord? This is where more hands should go up. You delight yourself in the Lord. The opposite of that is fretting about the evil around you and not trusting in doing the good that you know to do. You're observing the wrong things. You're letting it have an effect upon you. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. What's your desire? Who you really are. This is you. What's your desire from God? He'll give them to you. He'll meet the need. He'll provide it. So again, there's acknowledgement, but there's an answer. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in Him, and He will do this. Uh-oh. What else is He going to do? Well, commit yourself, delight yourself in the Lord. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in Him. He will do this. He will make your righteousness shine like the dawn, the justice of your cause like the noonday sun. You will shine in your world. You will make a difference. It will be coming from the inside, and it will come out. And it will be clear. The clarity of a noonday sun, the shining like the dawn. That's what righteousness in us will look like. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when men succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. What's He said? They're not worth it. They're going to have their due reward. They're not worth it. Think about yourself. Think about you. Think about what you can accomplish. Think about the effect you can have on other people. Instead of wasting your time fretting about the evil around you. I just thought of something. I wish I had thought about it this week. Facebook, about a year and a half ago, someone asked the question, are you concerned about the evil in our world and the effect it's going to have on your children? The answer blew me out of the water. I'm going to find it. I'll share it with you another time. It basically says, there's not that much different going on in our world that hasn't gone on before. And look at how you came through it. And look at how others mentored you. And look at the discipline that you've developed. And look about the strength of character and the strength of purpose you have as a Christian in your world. Maybe some of these hard things will make them half the person that you've become. If I can't find it, I gave you the short version. And isn't that true? The week we were leaving Jingzhou, four students came to our apartment, some of our best students, sophomores. They asked for Bibles. We'd been trying to give them Chinese Bibles for 2 years. They hadn't had the interest, if you will. They hadn't been there in our apartment like many others had been for a number of hours. We gave away about 7 boxes of Bibles while we were there to freshmen, sophomore, and junior college students. But someone had said to them that reading the Bible will help your English and teach you something about American culture, which is what we were there for. Now, we could have gone in the back room, Terry and I, and said, we've been saying that for But finally, they got it. It came from someone else, better than not coming at all, and we gave them the Bibles. And Jane, her English name that she took for herself, shared the difficulties of growing up, the difficulties of the early mornings and late nights in the Chinese educational system, even for 6th and 7th and 8th graders. And I looked at her and I says, Jane, you're one of our best students. Nothing you have said in sharing right now, I would have ever guessed it. Because all of that has worked to make you who you are right now. And that's true of all of us. It's true of all of us. Don't fret the things around you as if they have a control over you if you're trusting in the Lord, if you're letting Him guide you, and if you're being still before the Lord, wait patiently for Him. Refrain from anger, turn from wrath, do not fret, it only leads to evil. Don't get angry about it. For evil men will be cut off, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. Go forward. Verse 23, the Lord delights in the way of the man whose steps He has made firm. Though he stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with His hand. And the next verse I heard from an older gentleman. He preached my grandfather's funeral. So that tells you something about our feelings toward him. He would quote, I was young and now I'm old, and yet I've never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. God will supply. Time past, time future. It's consistent. I've never seen the righteous forsaken and their children begging bread. They are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be blessed. A summation for lack of time. Turn from evil, verse 37, do good. Then you will always live securely, for the Lord loves the just and will not forsake His faithful ones. We have fairly quickly left a meadow with birds singing and flowers blooming and a beautiful surrounding. Jesus took us there. And over the process of David's thoughts after Paul's admonition, it comes down, who you going to trust? Who you going to trust in your world? Who's going to have control of your life? Alice Caldwell Rice used the following statement to get my attention a number of years ago. Pardon the English. These are her words. It ain't no use putting up your umbrella until it rains. Once, a number of years ago, I've got 30 seconds, stay with me. Number of years ago, I was tempted to walk into a similar circumstance with an umbrella, and when class was about to begin, of pushing the button and the umbrella opening, and I knew that some people who are superstitious would have a heart attack. It wasn't worth having to call an ambulance and dismiss the service. But look at the picture that she gives us. Are you a person who's inside with an umbrella up? There's a double foolishness about that. One, you're inside protected from the outside. And two, it's not even raining outside. It ain't no use putting up your umbrella till it rains. Thank you.